ComicBookBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, October 6th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host. For the next 90 minutes here, we've got our Thursday mega show. I'll be joined by Tony George of TonyGeorgeSports.com for our picks and predictions segment. We'll go hunting for winners with Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. And we'll also do UFC predictions with Primetown for UFC 204 coming up here in Manchester, England this weekend. Sorry for stumbling over the intro to the show here today, but my Cleveland Indians in the playoffs tonight, so I'm totally amped up for the game tonight. So, you know, you'll have to excuse me if I get a little bit too emotional here or too over the top on today's show. But we got a lot of great stuff to get to, a lot of great guests. Also, we'll finish out the week strong tomorrow with our Westgate Super Contest selection segment for Week 5. Myself and Cole Ryan pouring over the card. We've got plenty of thoughts on that. And then also we'll have the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. We won't have the 11 a.m. live recording tomorrow. It'll probably be like a 9:30, 10 o'clock type of recording. But most of our listeners do listen after the fact. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there for those that do listen live. So with that, we'll go ahead and get into today's first segment. That is with Tony George, our picks and predictions with Tony George segment of TonyGeorgeSports.com. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Doing pretty good, Adam. Focused in on a big weekend of football here, coming off a bad weekend, both in college and the NFL. Was motoring right along there till last week and documented 66% in college and ended up going 1-3 and documented 64% in the NFL and had the same record. So one thing about my company and my websites, were transparent, and you know, everybody has one of those weeks, but we got stung last week with some bad calls and some bad beats, and have been kind of digging in and leaving no stone unturned here this week on college and pro football. So we're getting dialed in and, of course, working on some Major League Baseball playoffs as well. So that being said, you know, let's do it.
Well, let's talk about the NFL here and some of those struggles for a second. I talked about that a couple of days ago on Tuesday's show with Brad Powers, who also had a tough NFL weekend, and it seems like a good amount of people had difficult NFL weekends, you know, back there in week 4. And for you, you know, what kinds of adjustments do you make? I mean, do you just rely on the fact that you've done this for over 25 years? You've got that experience. You know, there's variance, you know, that there's ebbs and flows, or are there some, you know, some adjustments that you feel like you have to make?
Not really. You know, I've been doing this 25 years. You're just going to have those weeks. You're going to have weeks where, you know, you want to, the one thing about it is you want to try and outfox the books a little bit here, and you know, you're handicapping the line, and you know, we just had games there where I just felt that you know, I was going to side with the public. You know, I liked the lines in some of these games, and it just didn't happen. You know, turnovers, you know, took, you know, laying 4.5 or 5 points on Monday Night Football is always a risky proposition. You know, I thought that you know, the Giants with some of their weapons at wide receiver could challenge, you know, the Vikings. And you kind of think to yourself, the Minnesota Vikings, okay, they're without their number one quarterback, they're without their number one running back. You know, although they're well coached and their defense is really good, you know, this is going to be a real strong test for them. I thought that, you know, it would go one way or the other, 3 points, and they blew them out. They dominated them. You know, and, you know, even going into, you know, even after three games, what happens is when you analyze every game that goes down in the NFL, even after 3 weeks, there's still some question marks, you know, in terms of certain teams and how, you know, on the road or at home, there's still things that need to be answered. And a lot of them were answered last week at the expense of me losing against them. So, you know, you just, you pick up the pieces and you learn. I don't deviate from my handicapping perspective any more than ever. I mean, you know, if I gave you a choice to bet $100 in a game, and it's Rex Ryan versus Bill Belichick, who's gonna coach his players up to play a better football game? You're gonna say Bill Belichick all the time, and yet Rex Ryan goes in there and out coaches him after doing a horrible job. As a matter of fact, I don't think Rex Ryan's a good coach, but two out of the last 3 weeks, he's out-coached Bruce Arians and Bill Belichick, you know. And so I take a lot look at the coaching and things of those natures and make small adjustments. But for the most part, a power rating is a power rating. You weigh it against the Las Vegas line. You look at the injury report. If it's a divisional game, you look at a few trends but in divisional games, you know, this, that, and the other. Certain teams always give other teams fits every time they play, that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't deviate from it. I got a power rating. Power ratings get adjusted based on performance. I weigh that against the Las Vegas line, and I move on to the next week, put it behind me, and, you know, I ended up, 64-65% last year in a top four handicapper over at sportscapping.com out of 100 guys. And I had a weekend where I went 0-3, you know, and that weekend I went 1-4, including Monday Night Football. And then you turn around, you still end up, it's long-term, you know, is what you're looking at. Week to week, guys online like to buy, you know, who's ever hot at that time, you know, and you know, everything reverses. So at the end of the day, you know, I just maintain what I do and have done for 25 years, and it works itself out at the end of the day.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the games here coming up this weekend that I wanted to key in on. The first one, this game between the New York Jets and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this is a strange game for a lot of reasons because, you know, you've got a situation here where Pittsburgh coming off of a really, really great performance in primetime on Sunday Night Football against the Kansas City Chiefs. So you figure public perception going to be in Pittsburgh's corner here. On the other side, you've got the New York Jets, who a lot of people really liked last week, getting Seattle in a cross-country spot with Russell Wilson hurt. They're coming off of an 8-turnover game, which doesn't happen in the NFL. And the Jets look terrible again, particularly Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you get a game here this week where the Steelers are laying 7, and I want to get your take on this number, and if this is where you would have put it, say, maybe 2 weeks ago.
I probably wouldn't have put it here 2 weeks ago, and I was one of those guys that took the Jets last week. I took them on my service. I took them on my Super Contest picks as well. It concerns me more than anything. It concerned me that you have Seattle with a quarterback that had a strained MCL and still got a bum ankle, you know, that was able to get over on them on the road, and probably, I didn't do the math on this, but probably the longest road trip of any team, you know, any team that was making a road trip last week. And you know, on the other hand, you know, I knew Kansas City going into that game was in a little bit of trouble. They played the Jets, speaking of the Jets, Kansas City had played the Jets a week before in a game that I went to here in Kansas City. And Kansas City got 8 turnovers in that game, and yet their offense only scored 10 points. 14 of those 24 points Kansas City had against the New York Jets were scored by their defense. Then Kansas City couldn't score against Texas, the Texans. Kansas City is not got it going offensively. Their offensive line is Swiss cheese, you know, and Smith running for his life. I took Pittsburgh on a free play, you know, in that game on Sunday night. And so now you're looking at a game here where, you know, you got Jekyll and Hyde at quarterback for the New York Jets, and yet you have consistency at quarterback for Pittsburgh. Now they have Bell back. You know, they have all these weapons in place, and, you know, the Steelers always carry an extra 1 or 2 points because they're one of the most heavily bet teams in Las Vegas each and every weekend. The Pittsburgh Steelers are a huge, huge public favorite, you know, and that's going to continue here this weekend, and hanging a number on them. You know, the Jets were a great underdog team. That's why I took them last week. They were 5-0. Their last 6, or 5-0-1, they had a push. Last 6 is a dog prior to the losses the last 2 weeks, you know. And, you know, the Steelers and head coach Tomlin, 8-2-1 against the spread. Their last 11 at home, they're gonna bump that line up. But at the end of the day, I think this is too many points. I don't like laying 7 in the NFL, you know. And if I had a lean in this game, you know, I would take if Fitzpatrick can show up and not turn a ball over, the Jets can compete with anybody. They've got the players. Marshall, Decker, got a good running back. Quarterback is inconsistent, but if he's on, they can give you a ball game. Steelers, I'm not sold on their defense yet. I'm not impressed with what they did against Kansas City because Kansas City's offense is dog shit. So at the end of the day, in a game like this, you know, I definitely take the Jets. I'll probably take the Jets And I do teasers every week. I love teasers. I'm real good at them. Been doing them for years. I get a lot of crap about it, you know, from fellow handicappers. But at the end of the day, when you're going 70, 72% every year with teasers, you know, I'll add the 6 points to Jets, get them at 13, get them over 10, get them on that phone number of 13. I'd probably lean to the Jets in half of a teaser here. I don't know, but if you had a gun to my head in this game, because it's a tough one to call because the line's tricked out, I would lean towards the Jets here.
And we kind of talked about it there, and you were going through it looking at recent opponents that these two teams have played, and I think that's been one of the really hard things in the NFL this season, is that there's been a lot of inconsistency, and if you want to be generous, you can call it parity, but it's been hard week after week to evaluate how much some of these wins mean. You know, teams beating Carolina early in the season, well, we found out Carolina maybe isn't all that good this year. Or, you know, teams that played Minnesota tough early on, we thought, oh, well, you know, Minnesota's down some people, like the Titans, for example, in week one, who didn't give up an offensive touchdown to Minnesota in that game. But the Titans haven't played well since, and Minnesota's still undefeated. So I think that's been one of the hardships here early on in the NFL campaign.
Yeah, it has been, and you know, and the more you look at teams, you know, like Pittsburgh is a huge overplay at home every time they play. It seems their offense keeps them in ball games. Obviously, their defense hasn't, and you know, I think the New York Jets defense is more than capable of keeping the Steelers' attack in check. It's just when you have, you know, a quarterback throwing 9 interceptions in 2 weeks, you know, the way I look at that is, does he suck? Yeah, he does, but he's also got a lot of upside, and that's not going to continue. And I think you can establish the run, you know, against the Steelers, which is something that Kansas City couldn't do. They couldn't establish the run, which, you know, so obvious passing situations with a bad offensive line, you know, they're going to tee off on the quarterback. You're not going to have any production. I think that would change for the Jets a little bit here. So at the end of the day, you know, I think the Jets, I'm not laying 7 points with anybody this weekend. There's just too much crazy things going on in the NFL to be laying points all over the place. If I got to lay points at anything over 3 or 4, I'm not going to do it this weekend. I can tell you that right now.
Well, move to one of the 4:25 kickoffs here. That's between Cincinnati and Dallas. This is a number that's moved around between 1 on either side. You've had Cincinnati as a dog. You've had Cincinnati as a favorite. A couple of the books, the Chris books out there, showing Pick'em right now with a little bit of juice on the Bengals. So this is kind of a strange game here, because through 4 weeks of the season so far, you know, Dallas has been pretty impressive considering they don't have Tony Romo. Dak Prescott's looked good. They have probably the best offensive line in football. And then there's the Bengals, who we have no idea what they are at this stage of the game.
Yeah, I can't put a handle on the Bengals here. Speaking of the Jets, you know, they needed every second of the clock on that road game just to win that ball game. That was, I think, in the first week. And you know, they got beat up badly. I mean, badly at home by Denver. I mean, they just got dominated in that game, you know. And, you know, of course, last week we had a big play on them on Thursday night. I liked them against Miami just because Miami is so poorly coached right now. And they can't, you know, get a lap dance in Vegas with a fistful of hundreds as a team. So, you know, I was big on them then. I'm going to be big on anybody that's playing Miami right now. The way that Adam Gase has got, they just doesn't have any continuity there. You know, the one thing last year, you know, remember about the Bengals? They were an absolute moneymaker on the road. They were 7-0-1 versus the line away last season. You know, and this year now they failed to cover their first two away games. You know, and of course, Dallas finally won a home game. They didn't win one last year. They finally got a win here recently in home. I think the Prescott kid has done a tremendous job. Anybody that knows anything about football, he is no Tony Romo, but he's gonna be the eventual, you know, heir to the throne there, and he's proven it. And Elliott is a great running back, but then again, what you have to say here is he a great running back, or is he a product of that offensive line of Dallas, which is absolutely unbelievable? And the war in the trenches here, won by Dallas. They're at home. I don't trust Cincinnati on the road. I don't trust Marvin Lewis in a tight ball game. Jason Garrett's no bargain either with clock management late in the game and in, you know, a tight ball game. He's proven time and time again that he can louse it up. But, you know, I tell you what, I like the Cowboys at home here. In a pick 'em spot, you figure home field probably be worth 2 or 3 points here. you know, in this ball game. So they're telling you they think, you know, Cincinnati might be a little bit better. At the end of the day, I just like the way Dallas is playing. They got some momentum on their side. They've been a lot more consistent. They've surprised everybody. They got a very dangerous dual threat quarterback here. They got a good running back. They got the best offensive line in the game. Andy Dalton, great quarterback, no doubt about it. But, boy, he misses Sanu. I also heard they might get Tyler Eifert back for this game. He's been practicing this week, which might be a big plus for Dalton because he needs him. But I don't think he's going to be 100% if he comes back in this game. Obviously not up to game speed here. I'm leaning Dallas in this ball game. They've just been more consistent, and I like the way they're playing right now.
I think the Eifert conversation is really interesting because you're going to have a public perception reaction if Eifert does come back and play to where maybe this line moves a half a point or a point, something like that. But from a power rating standpoint, Tyler Eifert's a guy that doesn't really move the number at all. So I think that's a really interesting – go ahead.
No, it's just like Tom Brady this weekend. If Tom Brady wasn't playing this weekend, New England would be laying 4. You know, Tom Brady's for the full touchdown. Now they're laying 10.5 against Cleveland, who, by the way, Cleveland's given everybody a ball game this year, at least for three and a half quarters. You know, Hugh Jackson, despite the record, they've done a great job of competing. You know, and that's with Cody Kessler at quarterback. That's Hugh Jackson's been a good coach, but Tom Brady moving into that spot there, much like Eifert, Tom Brady has not even been allowed to set foot on the property or practice or have any conversations with team members going into that game, and yet that line's probably 6.5 points higher because he's playing. You know, and bear in mind, they got their ass handed to them last week by the Bills, who, you know, are no juggernaut. Conversely, you take a look at Eifert. You know, here's a guy that has been around the team, has been practicing, and yet it hasn't affected the line at all. And chances are he's going to be like Jamal Charles was against Pittsburgh last week. They're going to put him in spot situations, you know, give him 15, 17 snaps for the game. You know, Dallas is going to tee up on him and be looking for him in the seam. That's where he likes to live. He likes to run down the seam, you know, and play action and get and just, you know, tank it over in the middle, just like on a skinny post down the middle. You know, I don't think it's going to have that much effect on the game. You know, again, Dallas here, just Dallas is playing good football, probably the best football they played in the last 2 years right now. It's hard to buck them. Everybody was – the 49ers last week was a huge, huge service play. Sharps were all over the 49ers last week as well. Sharp players in Vegas, wise guy betters, and yet Dallas goes in there and beats them. And did a nice job of beating them in a tight ball game. And I just think, you know, and obviously, you know, the only reason, you know, you hear a lot about this extra time to prepare because they played Thursday night. I'm not buying into that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and I'm sticking with the Cowboys all the way here. I think Cowboys get it to 5-1 here.
We'll move over to the college side here. A couple of games I want to touch on. The first one, SEC West matchup between Auburn and Mississippi State. Auburn, 2.5, 3-point favorite out there in the market right now, depending on where you look. But a couple of teams that have been really inconsistent here so far this year.
Yeah, they have. And I think in a game like this, where it's a tight ball game, I look at the head coaches. Mullins is a better head coach. He's also off a bye week. They've had time to prepare. They've had Mississippi State, you know, Cowbell and Starkville. Pardon me, that is no joke. That is a tough place to go in and get a win. Mississippi State, you know, has not had the year they expected to have this year. I'm not sold on Auburn. Blowing out UL Monroe. And I'll tell you what, I had UL Monroe last week. I did. Auburn was off a huge game the week before. They were playing UL Monroe, laying 33. And then they had Mississippi State on deck. And they blew them out, which surprised me. It was a 58-0 or something like that. My computer's down right now, so I'm just doing this from memory. But nonetheless, you know, I really liked UL Monroe there in what I consider a sandwich game for Auburn. And it did impress me to come out and do what they did, but UL Monroe never got off the bus. Conversely, you know, you've got Mississippi State just had a couple of tough losses, South Alabama, you know, just unexplainable in that game there. But at day's end there, I really like the fact they've had a week off. I like Mullins here. And LSU, who have they beat? UL Monroe, Arkansas State, They beat LSU in a game where it could have went either way. The only reason it didn't go LSU's way is because Les Miles couldn't run the friggin' clock. Guess who I had in that game, by the way? I'm still pissed about that. I'm glad they fired him. He never could manage a game down to the wire there for LSU. So they really haven't beaten anybody of substance, in my opinion, here. This is a true test for them. And by the way, this is Auburn's first road game, Adam, of the season. So, you know, it's a tough spot. You got a team there that's pissed off, that's lying in wait, you know, ready to, you know, pin their ears back and get a win. Because this really here at 2-2 right now for Mississippi State, this is a make or break game for them. It really is. This is a huge game for Mississippi State. Home field's worth three. They're catching three. I'm taking them.
Yeah, for Mississippi State here, they go to BYU next week, which is a very tricky game. They obviously don't go out and play in the altitude. Kentucky at home, Samford at home, or Kentucky on the road, excuse me, Samford at home. Last four games for Mississippi State, Texas A&M at home, at Alabama, Arkansas at home, at Ole Miss. So if they want to get to that six-win plateau, get to a bowl game, this is a game that they absolutely have to have. So, you know,
yeah,
I agree with you.
And speaking of that, Texas A&M is the only good team that that Auburn has played, in my opinion. LSU's not that good. Missouri sucks. Okay, beating the hell out of Missouri doesn't mean anything. You know, Missouri's terrible. You know, I mean, I don't care if they put up 79 points against Delaware State the week before. Their quarterback sucks. Their defensive line sucks. Missouri can't tackle anybody. They can't tackle grandma pushing a shopping cart at Costco. So, you know, and LSU beat them with a second string running back, for crying out loud, and a new offensive coordinator, a new head coach. That's how bad Missouri is. But at the end of the day, the only good team that Auburn's played is Texas A&M, and they beat them. So, you know, going on the road and laying a number against Mississippi State, I can't bank on them. I'm not sold on their head coach, and I am sold on Mullins. And just as you stated, this is a must-win game for Mississippi State. It's all or nothing right here, and they know that. They're going to be ready.
Auburn with that 19-15 loss to Clemson there in week one, that Clemson team not playing particularly well. Coming into that game, it was, of course, the first game of the season. But, you know, Auburn still – I think the thing about Auburn here is really that, you know, Gus Malzahn doesn't have the quarterback that he needs to run this system. And Mississippi State, the one thing you can always say about Mississippi State, their defense is almost always good because Dan Mullins was a great defensive coordinator earlier in his career. You know, he's been a very good defensive-minded head coach here for Mississippi State. And that's how the Bulldogs have really been able to compete here with all these SEC West Titans. So – definitely an interesting game for a lot of compelling reasons. One other game I want to touch on here, we'll go over to the Big Ten. Indiana and Ohio State. Ohio State laying more than four touchdowns in this spot. They've blown out everybody that they've played. They've been extremely impressive. All the advanced metrics love them. Everyone thinks that this is one of the top two teams in the country. But this is an interesting spot for Ohio State here. They've got Wisconsin on deck and laying more than four touchdowns against an Indiana team just beat Michigan State last week.
Yeah, it's a big number here. You're sitting at 29.5. You take a look at Indiana against Ohio State. They're 5-0 against the spread against Ohio State the last 5 years. They had a great quarterback last year in Sunfeld and all that, and Indiana had a good team last year. And when he was quarterback, and they did cover some numbers. But they were all big numbers. Ohio State was always laying a huge number, and Indiana was able to get it done. And Indiana, you know, obviously, they should be, you know, undefeated. They had six turnovers, five interceptions against Wake Forest. And you can't – I don't care who you're playing. You could be playing Northern Illinois. You give another team six turnovers, six extra possessions in one game, especially on their side of the field, you're probably not going to cover a number, and you might not win. And that's what happened with Wake Forest. But beating, you know, Michigan State, I don't know what's going on with those guys. You know, really don't know. Going in pounding Notre Dame and then looking like a, you know, JUCO team the next 2 weeks, especially under Dan Antonio. But for Indiana to go in there and get that win was huge. You know, if you take a look at Indiana in terms of a backdoor cover, they're 22nd in total yards in the country on offense, 17th in the country in passing. And bear in mind that last week, that's going to be an interesting matchup because Ohio State held Rutgers to 33 yards passing in that game, in that blowout win. Unbelievable. Of course, Barrett was unstoppable in that ball game. I watched a little bit of it. It's one of those you just turn over the TV channel and go, yeah, well, you know, that's about what I expected. They're going to kick the shit out of them. and move on. But Indiana also 51st in total defense right now in college football. So there's a case to be made for catching 29. But the one I really like here in this game, I like the over 59. I think that total's too low. I think Indiana can put up 21 points here. And I think that you're going to find Ohio State in the high 30s, low 40s here. Ohio State this year, 77, 48, 45, and 58. Those are their offensive scoring productions in their four games. And I think they're going to get around 40, a little bit over 40. And I do think that they may even give 45. But I'll also tell you that Indiana will put up some points in this game. I think there's a definite advantage in taking a look at that over 49, or pardon me, over 59. And I see it up to 59.5 and even 60 in some spots where the line has moved on my odds tracker this morning. So there's some wise guys hitting that right now, and that number is going to get pushed up. So if you're going to make a play on this game, you make it here on Thursday.
Well, for Ohio State here, I don't know if complacency ever sets in for this team, because they have Urban Meyer, and he doesn't really allow that. But their offense has been stunningly efficient. They've gotten four touchdowns from the defense already so far this year with some pick sixes and things of that sort. At some point, though, you have to feel like, you know, I mean, Ohio State is a very, very public team, and they're obviously very good. They're the class of the Big Ten right now. But at some point, you have to feel like that efficiency on offense kind of slows down a little bit, right?
Well, it's amazing to me, and you mentioned the reason why. Urban Meyer, this guy only had six returning starters coming back. I mean, with an inexperienced young team, yeah, Barrett's a good quarterback, no doubt about that. But, you know, key defensive players, key offensive players, running backs, wide receivers, stud cornerbacks, great linebackers, good defensive rush in, all gone. Two games in the season, goes down and beats the hell out of Oklahoma in Norman. I mean, beat them badly with a young, inexperienced team, you know. And the one thing that you see about Ohio State is they play focused. When they put second teamers in, those second teamers play at a high level. There's no drop-off with Ohio State. They're coming at you every play. They remind me of the Nebraska of the 90s. When they lose everybody, they just reload and come out, and they just punch you right smack dab in the mouth again. The very next game, the very next year, doesn't matter who's in there, next man up, time to go, and that's coaching. And, you know, they're carrying numbers. They're 4-0 straight up and against the spread this year. They've laid numbers everywhere. They've covered them all. You know, in this game here, maybe there's a little bit of a drop-off. They might not cover 29. They're going to beat Indiana, have no doubt about it. If I had a gun to my head here, I definitely would take the 29.5 in some spots. Now, you might even see 30 because they're a public darling here. You might even see 30 on if you like catching points in this game with Indiana. And I think Indiana can backdoor cover them with some of their offensive firepower that they have. You might want to wait till Saturday till this line goes up to 30. But I think the real value in this game is going to be the over 59.
Well, a couple of good thoughts there with Mississippi State and then also the over in that Indiana-Ohio State game. Tony George of TonyGeorgeSports.com. What's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, rebound, vengeance, redemption for myself. Yeah, I got some great handicappers over here. I got three guys that are over 70% in the NFL documented year-to-date. And in this tumultuous climate, have no illusions. That's good. A couple of guys, you know, I'm still over 60% in college football as well. And some great handicappers. Every play is guaranteed. You just come over to the website, check it out. My SB Nation radio show is taped on Fridays, played live on Sirius and SB Nation radio on Sundays right before kickoff. Sunday mornings, 9 to 11. You can hear it on my website. It's archived on the homepage first. Got some great free play videos over there for you as well. So get over and check out the website. You won't be disappointed. We had 15 plays on there for free last Saturday. So TonyGeorgeSports.com, get over and check it out.
And also Tony does free pick videos over at BangTheBook.com. So if you're interested in those, you can get a look at those too at TGeorgeSports on Twitter. Tony, appreciate your time as always, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Well, good segment there with Tony George. Of course, had some computer issues there. So slipped up on that Clemson and Missouri spot in terms of the teams that Auburn had played. You know, overall, good analysis there, particularly with Mississippi State. Starkville is a very tough place to play. I don't think a whole lot of people realize that. That's why Mississippi State, one of the reasons why Mississippi State's been able to sneak up on some teams there in the SEC West in the past. But if you're interested in playing any of the free picks that you hear on the show, any that you've heard so far this week or any that you'll hear the rest of the week here on Bang the Book Radio, suggest that you do it over at DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over there, you can use the promo code BANG10, get a free $10 bet just for signing up. Also a 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. So that's over there at DSI Sportsbook, a good offer to take advantage of there. So with that, we'll focus solely on the college side here. Bring in Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Mr. Cheetah, how's it going today, sir?
Hey, doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time as always, man. A lot of things to get to here on the segment, so I'm going to go ahead and dive right in. We had a listener that asked about the process of setting college football totals. And we talked with a couple of handicappers early in the week about it, got a couple of different opinions. And of course, you know that I want to get yours here on the show today. So in terms of setting those totals, you know, what's kind of the process that you go through?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I have a model that I use as a base. So it kind of spits out a number for each game or each matchup, I should say, based on the teams that are playing each other. And there's a lot of different factors that go into creating that. But generally, I won't just blindly use that number. You know, you want to look at the situation potentially for each team. And then also, you know, obviously the weather potential in this is a good week or a good example for that. We saw, you know, five or six games because of the, you know, Hurricane Matthew coming through South Florida and part of the East Coast. You know, you had five or six games, I think, that dropped 5 or 6 points on a, you know, on a total on Monday or Tuesday, I should say. And, you know, that's pretty significant. And so weather plays a big factor, but I think a lot of the times it's overblown sometimes. And so I actually looked at a couple games, particularly Tulane, Central Florida, that had dropped, I think, down to like 47.5 and was looking at playing the over. And then they actually, I think, canceled that game completely. So I won't be able to do that. But in some cases there's no actual kind of historical, you know, back-tested data that says, you know, rain or really bad weather is necessarily means it's going to go under. In a lot of cases, I think it means, you know, more turnovers or whatever, which can lead to points. And, you know, not necessarily that it's going to be a grinded out game that doesn't have any. So that's just, I guess, one tip there. But you have to account for all those variables like you would situationally, you know, picking sides as well. If you think a team's going to be really flat coming into a certain game, then you probably don't want to be betting an over in that game because that team's not going to be scoring early on or whatever you might assess. So there's a lot of different factors and variables, but the base of it all comes from a pretty valuable, you know, algorithm or model that I use to get a base number and go from there.
Now, I'm sure, obviously, you don't want to give away all of your secrets there, and I know that you've done very well with totals. I imagine that there's a lot of the obvious stuff in there, like pace, yards per play, all that type of thing. But if there was one stat that you think that our listeners should really focus on, or maybe one that gets overlooked, maybe you know, one that's sort of off the radar a little bit in terms of setting some totals numbers or taking advantage of what tends to be a soft totals market early in the week. You know, what stat or stats would you suggest?
I think one that a lot of people think maybe yards per play accounts for everything. I would say another one that you have to use is that you'd think maybe it's the same thing, but it isn't, is a points per play. So I guess an example would be, you know, a defense that is kind of bend but don't break type of defense where they don't give up a ton of big plays. They maybe let teams eat up yards. Once they get down inside the red zone, they really tighten up because, you know, it's more clustered and clobbered there inside the 20 or inside the 10 even. And so you have a team like that that maybe gives up more yards per play, but defensively kind of schemes to where they're giving up a lot more field goals and touchdowns. And so when you actually look at the points that are being, you know, allowed by that team, it's a lot less than, you know, the yards per play number would suggest. And then, you know, on the flip side, you have a few teams. Southern Miss is a really good example. Their yards per play is, and they did the same thing last year. And I think part of it is their style. Part of it's Nick Mullins, but they move the ball so well, but they turn it over so often. And so when you're, you know, outgaining your teams regularly by 200 yards, but you know, you're not even, you know, you're not even, you know, 500 ATS, you know, that's because you're turning it over so much. It's because you're not scoring points, even though your yards say you should be scoring X amount of points, you're not getting there. And so the points per play kind of accounts for, you know, a team that's very turnover prone, you know, a defense that schemes a certain way to defend better inside the red zone. It just gathers more of that information that just a yards per play stat wouldn't. So I think that's a key one that you have to use as well.
And for any of our listeners out there that don't follow Sports Cheat on Twitter, I have no idea why. But you post some live bet stuff that you do as well, because that's not stuff that you can post over at Wager Talk. It's not something that can be tracked, you know, just because of the immediacy of it. But you mentioned taking the over in game last night in the Georgia Southern Arkansas State game. I think you had 49.5, game ended 53. So in terms of that, in terms of live betting with totals, what kind of stuff are you looking for there?
Yeah, a lot of it, I'll never make an in-game play if I'm not following the game, like literally, you know, I was watching the game, the entirety of it from the beginning. I had the baseball game on too, but I was following both. And, the Arkansas State, Georgia Southern, total was, had actually come down a few points, I believe, from open. And it kind of gotten to a point where I was interested in the over before the game had actually even started. And then, late in the first quarter, Arkansas State's offense had actually been moving it fine, but they had already turned it over three times. And Georgia Southern had scored a touchdown, so it was 7-0. And, you know, getting a pretty good adjusted number. It was like the close, I think, was 54.5 or so. And at 49.5 at that point, it was evident that Arkansas State was going to be able to move the ball. And, you know, offensively, they looked better than they had, at least to this point in the season. And so, you know, I jumped in and played the over there. Like you said, it was 49.5 exactly, and which was looking really, really good, actually, after the third quarter ended, needed one more touchdown. And there was, like, 0 points almost the entire fourth quarter until right at the end, Arkansas State luckily scored a touchdown for us. But it's like you said, I post them there on Twitter for free just because, you know, there's no other way really to give them out. So for people that are on Twitter at the time or set notifications or whatever, which I wouldn't suggest generally doing because I tweet too much. But if you're on Twitter, you see a live bet and you have a chance to get it. They're usually pretty good. I think we've hit 7 or 8 in a row now over the, you know, the last 2 weeks of games and stuff. So I've been on a nice little run.
So primarily the deciding factor for you would be game flow, or is it, you know, adjusted based on the pregame total that you had set?
Oh, sure. So I kind of, you know, there's a lot of pieces I kind of went one way, but one thing I wanted to kind of verify or specify at the beginning was that I have to be watching the game. And the reason being, especially in like basketball live betting, there's a lot of things that can happen with injuries that if you're not actually following the game, or, you know, it's the same thing for betting second half plays. You need to be aware of, you know, what's actually happening in that game. If, you know, and if you need your example, using a big name like a quarterback in the NFL, potentially, you know, say Tom Brady actually gets injured in the second quarter against the Browns and it's tied and everyone's going to go to the, you know, hammer the -7 second half. But really, that might not be the right play considering he's not going to be coming back into the game. And so it's very, very important to always be paying attention to what's happening in that game. And so that's part of the game flow, too, I think, is knowing, you know, for basketball, who's in foul trouble or who isn't, if there is an injury, that type of thing. And particularly for basketball, another example, I think, is just how the game's being called. Football is a little bit different. If there's a holding penalty or pass interference penalty, I mean, it's going to get called. But in basketball, especially if you're betting totals, certain, you know, officiating crews, which you can kind of dig into this before the game, they call the game a certain way, and then you can actually see, you know, the way it's going to be called, you know, after the first quarter, and you can make adjustments that way. So yeah, game flow is definitely important. I think a lot of it's, or a lot of them are spots that I was maybe considering betting anyway, and I wanted to kind of wait and see. And we talked about wait and see last week, you know, on certain games where we're trying to get a better number maybe later in the week. Well, take that a step further and use that to wait and see. Not only if you can get a better number during the game, but also wait and see if you were correct about how the game was going to go. And I think even though it was only 7-0 at that, like late in that first quarter last night, of Georgia Southern Arkansas State, it definitely was evident by, 10, 12 minutes into the game that Arkansas State was going to move the ball. Georgia Southern's run game was going to be okay, and we were going to see more points. And so I thought that was a good time to jump in.
Well, and of course, the nice thing about it is that you would have had a tough luck loser if you had played the over. Well, I guess you said it got down to 53, right? So you wound up, you would have been on a push side, or if it was 53.5, something like that, would have been a tough luck loser. But instead, just by waiting a little bit, confirming your suspicions about the game, you wound up taking what could have been a loser or a push and turning it into a winner. So that's really what the value of live betting can be. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'll jump in. I didn't want to interrupt, sorry. But it's very important to realize this is kind of like the happiness part or the tilting part of just betting or being a gambler. But you're right. You absolutely right. If you wait and then you have an opportunity like that where you're getting a better number, and, it landed 53, so most people probably lost the bet at pregame by, a half point or a point, and we won. That was fortunate, but the people will say, well, what happens if, they score like three touchdowns in the first 5 minutes? And I always respond like, well, then you go 0-0 and you don't lose any money. Like there's nothing wrong with ever going into a game with that approach and then not making a bet and not losing any money. So that's the worst case. And if the worst case is going 0-0, that's totally fine. So I'm glad you brought that up, because sure, you can get better numbers a lot of the time waiting, and that can end up being into your advantage. But if it isn't, because you're, say, like an over, and there's a bunch of touchdowns early in the game, you go 0-0 because you didn't touch it after the fact, there's nothing wrong with that. And, you can move on, and you can't get down on yourself.
I think it's an especially important point to make here, where we're starting to get some of the midweek fun belt. We'll have Maction coming up. Of course, we always have the standalone Thursday games. There's four games here on Friday. People want to get action in when they get those standalone games, or where there's just a couple of games going on. And that's a good lesson to learn, where maybe you don't have to take a pregame position, but if you're going to watch the game anyway, you wait for a better opportunity for live betting.
Yeah, that's true. Last night was a good example. I think tonight and tomorrow, the Thursday, Friday night games, there's like seven of them. So there's definitely going to be opportunities there. But if you want action, and you have access to live betting, and you have no idea what you want to bet before the game starts, wait and see if you trust, the way you can assess a game while it's being played, and then get, a better feel for what to expect. And yeah, definitely a good advantage to, add to your arsenal of handicapping.
Well, one thing I want to mention here before we do some picks and some breakdowns here of the Week 6 action, that 5% bet over at wagertalk.com, the play that you were selling over there, premium selection, where the proceeds were going to the Live Like Bella Cancer Foundation, which was something that Jose Fernandez supported a lot during his life before it was tragically ended. How did that play work out for everybody?
It worked out well, actually. It was Clemson, and I'd actually suggested half of the play, so 2.5% was a bet on +2, and the other 2.5% was on. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I saw it was 5%. I didn't know it was split money line and spread. Is that something you normally do?
No. It was the other half of 2.5% was just on the money line. It was like +110 or whatever. Overall, it was still like a 5% play. We ended up winning a little bit more because of the money line. But it's something I'll do generally on games that are in a similar area, like the +1.5 to +2.5 range. The other example, I think I used it as my best bet on this show last week that I gave out, was Washington State. And, I said, unless it gets to +3 or higher, I think there's a lot of value in just taking like a +20 money liner. And I think that one actually even got up to +130. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in playing a short dog that's under a field goal in the money line versus taking, a 1.5 or 2, since it's not landing 1 or 2 very often. And especially in a game like Oregon, Washington State, or Louisville comes in with a total that's so high anyways, there's just a lot more value in, instead of laying -110 to, maybe win if it lands on one, reverse that, you're getting +120. It's like a 30-cent swing. That adds up in the long run. If you're wrong, you're wrong. You save 10 cents, which, doesn't seem like a big deal on one play, but if you do that often and over time, that's going to save you a lot of money on losses. And then on wins, you're not only just winning, 1x, but 1.1 or 1.2x. So definitely a good tip, I guess, for people going forward.
But that Clemson pick was a winner there. So, you know, when you get the figures back from Wager Talk of whatever that donation is going to be, I know that you're going to post that on Twitter. And, you know, once again, kudos to you for that. I thought it was for a tremendous cause. And, you know, I'm glad it worked out for everybody. But looking ahead here to week six, we'll go to Friday night. We'll talk first about Boise State and New Mexico. Boise State, a 17.5-point favorite here in this one against the New Mexico team that's played some very high-scoring games here so far.
Yeah, and I actually kind of like the New Mexico side. The one thing I'm actually waiting on is, and this is kind of jumping the gun, I guess, on breaking this game down. I'll do that in a second, but Boise State was steamed last week pretty hard. They were -20.5, -21 against Utah State and got all the way up to 24.5, which I thought was pretty crazy. I actually almost added the Aggies at that point, and I should have because they covered pretty simply. I think it only ended up being like a 21-10 final. So Boise State got bet on that week. They've been bet on a few other times during the season already. And so on a Friday night game that's kind of – it's not completely singled out, but you're going to have kind of the public that's watching it, potentially laying the favorite, and actually the Boise State – side's been a quote-unquote sharper bet on team to this point where the market's moving their direction. I'm going to wait and see if you can get the hook at 17.5 at least, or maybe even, you know, 18, 19, 20 if it moves like it did against Utah State. And at that point, I probably will end up on New Mexico taking the points. Boise State doesn't defend the option very well. They haven't in the last few years. New Mexico actually beat them pretty easily. I think it was last year outright on the road. And then the year prior went down to the very end. And Boise State won a close one. And so I expect New Mexico to be able to move the ball and honestly keep it within the 2.5 touchdowns. So that's a play that I'll probably end up being on, just kind of waiting and seeing if the Boise State line keeps getting driven up like it has in the past few weeks.
New Mexico had 49 points when these two teams played in 2014. Last year they won in Boise as a 31-point dog, 31-24. Yeah. So, yeah, that sort of lends credence to your point there. And that kind of brings me to my next question is, you know, I understand it's only a two-game sample size, so you don't want to draw too many big conclusions from it. But why would Boise get steamed here in this spot? I mean, it just seems like it'd be kind of counterintuitive.
Yes, I would be saying the same thing. But you actually see it every year with certain teams. Last year isn't a good example. I think it was 2 years ago. Yeah, it was 2 years ago there was a West Virginia team that for whatever reason would get steamed the hell out like every single week. I did not get it in like three of the times out of the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season. I liked the other side, and I learned to just wait and take 3 or 4 points better at the end of the week after I made the mistake once earlier in the year of betting against West Virginia early in the week. And there's just certain guys that, you know, they believe they're, you know, their numbers or their way are correct, and they keep steaming it up and betting on that team until they finally maybe win one. And, you know, Boise State might be an example this year of a team that's like that. They might not be either. You might be right. There could be a sharp group that takes plus 17 and moves this to 16.5 or something. And at that point, you're losing out on the 17. So generally, if you're going to be kind of playing that weight game, like I'm doing in this particular instance, you need to be pretty, responsive. You need to be watching a screen constantly all day, which I'll be doing today and tomorrow. And, you know, if you see something start moving or hear something, just with some of the people I talk to and get and trade information with, then I'll hurry and, you know, take the 17. But if you're just someone that is at work 9 to 5 and you can't see that it's going to be moving to 16 or 16 and a half, then it makes it tougher to do that and wait and see. So in that case, I might suggest just taking the 17, you know, if it moved up to 17.5 or 18, it's not the end of the world. You know, if it lands 17, you push and you don't actually lose anyway. So yeah, there's definitely some, I guess, caveats with playing or approaching a game that way.
Well, there are some 17.5s out there in the market now. So we'll see what happens if those go away temporarily. And then, you know, maybe if public players kind of push that 17.5 back out there on game day on Friday. We'll move to Saturday here. The Red River Rivalry, Red River Shootout, Red River Showdown, whatever the hell it's called now. Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma laying double digits here in this spot. And for Texas, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, although I guess it's not really that far behind the scenes with all the Charlie Strong stuff.
Yeah, to be honest, this line, is it still 10 or 10.5? Is that the general number?
Yeah, 10.5. A couple of multiple 11s out there.
There are 11s now. I actually have this like a touchdown, and I'm pretty astonished to see the number this high. And there's nothing – and I was a guy that backed Oklahoma last week, to be honest. So I it's not like I'm down on Oklahoma. I bet against them – or, excuse me, bet on them when they played against Ohio State. That was incorrect. But so they're generally a team that I think has been undervalued a little bit after that loss to Houston early on. And now they're, you know, 4-point tie. I don't get it. And Texas is a team, obviously, that is playing – their backs against the wall, especially Charlie Strong is taking over and calling all the defensive plays now. And so they're playing, he's playing for his life or coaching life. They're playing a team that they just beat outright two of the last 3 years anyways. And I think their one loss 2 years ago was only by five. And they're getting double digits. And it's a Texas team that might be better than their last few. I don't get it. It seems like super trappy or something. I'm going to kind of wait and see, talking to some people tonight that I trade some information with and see if anyone sharp's backing the Longhorns, and if so, then I'll hurry and take the double digits now. If not, then I might just stay away and look at betting this one live Saturday, because I think you expect Texas defense to be better, but they've been so bad that if they're not, then I could obviously see Oklahoma's offense, you know, running away with it and winning by 14, 21 points. So this is a good example, kind of talking back to our in-game stuff in the beginning of the segment. This would be a game I would definitely would want to look in game, and if Texas looks like they're going to be okay or be right there, and I like what I'm seeing, then I'll play the Longhorns during the game.
I've talked about this a lot. My favorite thing about this industry, about handicapping, is looking at the market, trying to break down these games, trying to, you know, put myself in the minds of an odds maker, try to, you know, forecast where these numbers are going to go, all that type of thing. I love putting the pieces of the puzzle together. When I get a game like this, I find myself wondering, is this a true number based on a power ratings position from the people that supply lines, or is there just a lot of perception bias here in this number? Because Texas, you know, everyone's talking about how historically bad this defense is from a program standpoint. It's all over ESPN. Everyone knows about the whole Charlie Strong thing. It just sort of feels like, you know, I don't know if this is a true number from the odds makers or if there's just a lot of noise in it.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. There's two points we can kind of refer to. One's the main one. This actually opened up, I think it was 6.5. So this has been bet up hard. I mean, it was a Sunday opener, which actually opened here in Vegas first before even BetOnline opened their numbers. And it might have been late Saturday night, but CGT decided to open like 6 or 7 marquee games for this week and first before anyone else. And so they posted them. And, you know, the other one that moved a lot was Washington State, Stanford, and Washington State opened plus 13. That's been bet down a ton. It's, you know, 7 now. And so both of those games, the other 5 were pretty much, I think, close to where the numbers are at. But those two moved a ton. And so technically that 6.5 was like right where I lined the game. And so the fact that it's moved up, I don't think is necessarily odds makers, because there's a bunch of books that copied them and posted their lines, including BetOnline and some other ones here in Vegas and some other offshores basically just copied those numbers. So the fact that now it is 10.5, 11 is because they've just been taking Oklahoma money. And the reason I think that they are is I think you're getting a similar spot as Alabama at Ole Miss in the double revenge type spot, where you have Oklahoma who just lost to Texas again last year. And people are thinking, hey, they're going to crush them because they have to, and they're, you know, they're tired of losing to Texas, whatever. And, you know, I said during that Alabama Ole Miss matchup, I think it was almost the same exact thing. It got up to double digits to like 11, and my number was 7. And I was like, you know, what is it about, because they've lost twice to Ole Miss, is worth 4 points to a game? Or, you know, Nick Saban off double revenge. Like, we don't have any real historical or quantifiable data that says Nick Saban off of losing to Ole Miss twice means they are 4 points better today. It was an extremely inflated line. And ultimately, it comes down to the X's and O's, and Ole Miss just plays Alabama perfectly. They don't run it into the middle of their offense, or their defense, excuse me. Their offense is a spread it out, up-tempo. You know, Chad Kelly makes plays, and, you know, they were able to hang again. And actually, they went up early, and Alabama had to come back and, you know, score a couple defensive touchdowns just to win late. I see a similar thing here. People are thinking Oklahoma, because they've lost to Texas 2 out of the last 3 years, and, you know, they're trying, you know, they just won the TCU game and now they have to, you know, win the Big 12 or whatever. I don't get it. I don't think there's any reason why this number should be double digits, to be completely honest. So if you do like Texas or you haven't bet them yet and you're waiting to hear, you're definitely getting value in a number that's high. So it'll be interesting to see where the number ends up going, because Alabama Ole Miss one I expected to come down, and it never did. So we'll see about this game.
And that's kind of a rookie mistake on my part there, looking at the odds screen and having the wrong opening line, because some of these odds screens you can set where you want the opener to come from. Definitely make sure that you're setting it at a place that, you know, actually comes out with an opener early and doesn't just copy somebody else's line, because that's a really significant move there from the Wynn or CG Technologies opening number of 6.5, 7, now up into double digits where it is. So, you know, keep that in mind as well for our listeners out there. And I'm kind of embarrassed that mistake myself, but you know, the odds maker number is going to be that first one. Everyone else is going to copy after the first round of action comes in. So make sure that you're getting your information from the correct source. Another game to look
at
here, Alabama.
I just wanted to say at that point, the opener, and you're okay, because this is the first week CGT had even done that. I don't know if it's going to be a regular thing. If it is, great. I'm excited because it's earlier lines than even BetOnline or whatever to bet into. But the one thing, like you're saying, is look at where it opened, but that is the odds maker line. But then to see it move like that, there's only one answer to that. It isn't because the other odds makers said, no, this needs to be 10.5 or 11. It's because the people betting into this game are betting Oklahoma. And then especially earlier in the week to this point, that's kind of as plain as day, you know, in plain view. And so, yeah, definitely a good point to make. Find out where the opening number is. But the move to, you know, by a Wednesday or Thursday is generally to that, you know, to that significance is going to be because of the team that's getting bet on.
Well, move down the card a little bit here and look at Alabama and Arkansas. And this is a very interesting game for a lot of different reasons, because Nick Saban's laying a very big number on the road. I know that this is a game we talked about with Brad Powers earlier in the week where he thought that the number was a little bit too high. What's your take on it?
Yeah, actually, I talked to him on Tuesday, and he's a little higher on Arkansas than I think generally than most people. So his number was low. My number actually says it's a little bit short. But I for me, I understand why it's short. I think my number is actually like 16, and so at 14, I'm never going to really be betting Alabama. You have, I guess, people probably looking. They have Tennessee on deck on the road, which is a big game for their SEC title hopes. But I don't expect Nick Saban and company to like really be overlooking Arkansas. It's a team that's played them very, very close the last 2 years. Last year they were losing at home to Arkansas 7-3 at halftime. They ultimately ended up, I think, winning the second half like 24-7. And anyway, they won the game by 13. Arkansas still covered, but they were actually winning that game, you know, middle of the third quarter. And the year prior, Arkansas was winning at home 13-7 into the fourth quarter. And they gave up a touchdown late and lost by one. So this is another example of, you know, a team that's recently just played, you know, the X's and O's against Alabama. They've played them really well. So to be getting two touchdowns seems enticing. From a straight numbers, you know, perspective, I actually think the line's short, but I can see why it's, you know, at 14, even though my numbers say it should be 16 or whatever. So I'm going to be staying away. But I'll be interested to see kind of Arkansas in general, you know, what to expect from this point on in their season, because they've looked really, really bad in certain games, a la Louisiana Tech at home. They should have lost to start the year. They ended up barely winning. It's huge favorites, but they've also, you know, beat TCU and looked good in that game. And, you know, they lost by 21 to Texas A&M. They didn't look like they were for real in that game, but then again, Texas A&M is maybe a top 10 or top 5 team. So I think we'll learn a lot about Arkansas from this point forward. And so I won't be betting the game, just kind of taking it in and using it for the future.
So Alabama is a team that, you know, very public darling. They have 5-star recruits on special teams and basically in the 3 deep. So, you know, they're obviously a team that's very, very good. But on the season so far, they blew out USC, who a lot of people don't think is very good, beat Western Kentucky. They got that win over Ole Miss on the road. Last 2 weeks, a couple blowouts over Kent State and Kentucky. Now for Alabama, at Arkansas, at Tennessee, host Texas A&M, at LSU. You know, do you feel like we still have something to learn about Alabama, too, even though we kind of know what they do year after year?
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially offensively. I was actually talking to, you know, Matt Lindemann just from Twitter, and he's a Kentucky fan. And I told him that game was 3-3, like with 6 minutes left in the second quarter. And, Western Kentucky was another one. Alabama rushed for, like, under 2 yards per carry against Western Kentucky. And some of the Nick Saban in that game in his post-game conference or presser or whatever was very, very visibly upset and specifically talked about how they weren't able to establish a run. And their offense has actually shown, you know, times that they've struggled to this point. And so even though they ended up beating Kentucky pretty easily, it might have been like 34-6 final, something like that. Kentucky covered, you know, they were covering for 60 minutes. It wasn't even close. And so, yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to learn as Alabama starts playing even stiffer competition, find out where they're at. Their defense has been absolutely fantastic. But like you said, they haven't played a ton of great teams. And I don't think Arkansas's offense is very great. But when you look at, you know, Tennessee, Texas A&M, LSU, who LSU might be kind of reinvigorated now after firing Les Miles, and Orgeron's going to do a great job, I think, there. That this is a tough stretch for Alabama, and definitely will learn, you know, who they are. And what's nice, I guess, about the SEC and Alabama especially is they're kind of allowed to lose one game if they need to, and if they run on the table from that point on, they're still okay. They'll get into the SEC title game, chance to win that and go to the college football playoff. So, you know, if they run the table anyways the next month and you know, they're undefeated going into that final stretch, then obviously this is the odds-on favorite to win it all. Probably still are if they lose a game. And at that point, I might actually look at taking a future flyer, if it makes sense, on Alabama if they do drop one of these next few games the next few weeks.
One more game I want to touch on here. We'll do it quickly in the interest of time. I know you got a lot going on with a relatively newborn baby out there. Washington State and Stanford, we touched on this game already. Just as you were talking about the quick line move that happened on this one from CG Technology, open 13 or 13 and a half, whichever you said. Offshore, the consensus opener was 9.5, and money still came in on Washington State, who's now just a 7-point dog for this one at Stanford.
Yeah, this is one I think actually got bet down at CGT right away. The Oklahoma one didn't even really get touched. So for if you look into it a little deeper, I think people in Vegas here weren't betting Oklahoma, and that was at 6.5. And so once it opened up at like Wynn and some of the offshores, then it got bet. So in this case, though, I think people here thought the Washington State line was too high. It got bet down to like 10, and then it even opened up a little lower at some of the offshores. You mentioned 9, 9.5. And then even since then, it's come down. And this is a spot I had Stanford or nothing for me. My number is like 11. So I think it's too short now. I think you're getting a Stanford team that's, I don't know. I think it's really interesting. You have a Washington State team that people – they look at Oregon and they say, oh, wow, they lost to Washington State. And so this is a game I know we're not supposed to be talking about, but they're like over touchdown underdogs at home to Washington, which is pretty inflated. You know, a month and a half ago, game of the year, they were 4.5-point favorites. So that's a pretty big swing. And people think, oh, Oregon stinks because they lost to Washington State. And then you see the same people say, oh, Washington State, they're really good. They got a chance to beat Stanford. And I don't know, well, which one is it? I think Stanford, not only do they match up well in the fact that they're able to – one thing worth mentioning, sorry, I know you said we're supposed to keep this one quick, but look at the team Stanford's played so far. They've played a very, very, very good – going into last week, Kansas State was the number one defense in the country. They played them to open the year, and people were like, oh, their offense didn't look great. McCaffrey couldn't run it very well. Then they just played UCLA, USC, and Washington. Those four defenses are stout as can possibly be. They not only are just great defenses, but they're better against the run, and the front sevens of those teams are just massive. And so now you have a Stanford team going against a lot weaker, a lot smaller Washington State defense. In a game, they're coming off, you know, an embarrassing loss, 44-6 to Washington. They're going to establish the run. They're going to go back to their roots, which they couldn't really do once they went down big to Washington. And they're going to control this game. McCaffrey's going to be able to run free because they're playing such a weaker defense that they've been playing. And I think people are kind of forgetting that for whatever reason, and they're not taking into account the fact that they probably played four of the top 15 front sevens in the entire country to start the season, and now they're playing, you know, someone that's outside the top 50 defensively against the run. So I don't get the number at all. It's -7. I think a clean -110. If it got to 6.5 even, I'm definitely going to be on Stanford in some form. I might look at a first half play, actually, if, you know, Washington State's off a big win for them, for their program against Oregon. Stanford off the embarrassing loss, maybe they come out fired up. So I'm going to kind of, you know, wait and see with this game too, but I definitely do like Stanford coming down here at a touchdown or less.
Well, a lot of great thoughts here today from Sports Cheetah. And look, man, I'd let you talk college football as long as you wanted to. I'm just trying to to keep you and your family in mind here. But do you have, you kind of gave one out there a little bit, I think, but do you have an exclusive free pick for our show listeners?
Yeah, this is one that I gave out on a video that I did yesterday. So if you didn't catch that, you can hear it here and play it tonight. It's on Temple plus 10.5, or I think it's mostly plus 10 now. And actually, he played Moneyline plus 329 as well. I think this line also another one that's gotten out of control. I was astonished to see it go to double digits after it opened around a touchdown. You have a Memphis team that basically played their FCS opponent in week one. And then if you were to give me the two next worst, you know, FBS teams in the country right now and, you know, realize they played Kansas and Bowling Green, they essentially played three scrimmages to start their season. Then they played Ole Miss last week and lost by 20 as expected. Ole Miss actually covered. I don't know. We don't really know how good this, you know, Memphis team is. They don't have Paxton Lynch anymore. He's in the NFL slinging it for the Broncos. Justin Fuentes at Virginia Tech doing really good things with that program. Now he's the head coach of Memphis the last few years, kind of the guy who turned around their program. And I'm skeptical to see where Memphis is really at. We don't know, let alone are they laying double digits to a really good Temple team that held Paxton Lynch and Justin Fuente Memphis last year to 12 points. You know, they've beat Memphis. They've had this matchup on lockdown. And it's the same Temple team, same Temple head coach as last year. I don't get this line at all. That's why I played Moneyline. I think it's more of a coin flip game. And so when you're getting plus 329 and a coin flip or plus 10 points, you have to take it. So Temple tonight, it's a Thursday night game. Take the points and play some Moneyline.
Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. What's going on over there at the website preparation for this weekend?
Nothing like last week. I know we had a couple, you know, the big play, and we had another play that was for sale on a Friday night. But for me here, it's just the Saturday slate of games and some NFL on Sunday. And so I just suggest for people that like, you know, my volume in general is high coming off a week that was the best week of the season. I guess I should plug it. We went 17-4. That probably will never happen again, but you know, I think we have an edge in you know, a good portion of games again this weekend, and so hopefully we do well. You can get the, you know, all weekend access pass or whatever and go that route. That's probably the best way to go with the amount of plays that I give out.
Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Sports Cheetah. Press, appreciate your time, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yep, take it easy.
We'll switch over from the gridiron here to the octagon, bring in Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com. Jay, how's it going today, man?
Doing great. How's it going, Adam?
Doing well. I'm sure you're doing great. You're out in Vegas. You're not too hungover, are you?
No, not hungover, but I'm still adjusting to the time switch. So, got, you know, it feels like I woke up in the middle of the night. Yeah, I'm ready to go. Pretty excited. Going to be here all weekend. You know, in Sin City, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And you know, glad to talk today about UFC 204.
It's too bad that this UFC 204 car is across the pond in Manchester as opposed to out in Vegas. Because I imagine you'd have found a way to go, right? You ever been to one out in Vegas?
Definitely. I'm sorry?
Have you ever been to a UFC event in Vegas?
Yes, I've actually at UFC 168, which was the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen rematch fight. It was the July 4th weekend card, which is typically the UFC's biggest event of the year. Yeah, that was a really great event. I mean, maybe the weigh-in was better than the fight itself. The weigh-in, I think, was completely filled at the MGM Grand, which is pretty incredible. You know, to get 12,000-15,000 fans, whatever the number ended up being, just to see a weigh-in. But, yeah, really great experience.
So this one here, the first pay-per-view event to be held in Europe or the Middle East since UFC 112. So in that sense, is this a pretty strong card, given that it's such a big event?
It's a decent card. You know, some injuries definitely affected it. But it definitely has its appeal, and I kind of like what the UFC's been doing of late, kind of deciding on pay-per-view venues based on the champion who's involved in the title fight. So just kind of taking that a step back here, UFC 203 has Stipe Miocic, who's from Cleveland, headlining a pay-per-view card in Cleveland, and now you have Michael Bisping headlining a card in Manchester when he's from Northern England. So I like that idea. I think that's going to make for, you know, exciting crowd and crowd really into it, and I think that kind of makes sense. The one thing that's really weird here is that this pay-per-view is on American time, so this main event isn't going to, you know, it's probably going to start at 12 Eastern time. in the United States, which is going to be 5 a.m. British Standard Time in England. So you have a main event title fight kicking, you know, actually happening at 5 a.m. local time. So that's kind of a really weird dynamic, and I'm curious to see, you know, if that's going to affect results at all.
I was just going to ask, is that something that you've really factored into your handicapping then for this event, that the time is so strange?
I mean, it's so hard because there's really no precedent for it, or there's just a very limited precedent for that type of thing. And there's been a couple of Brazil cards that have, you know, kicked off late, but this seems to be even later than that. So I don't really think you can really, you know, handicap that type of situation because there really isn't much of a sample size. So I think you just kind of have to go with, you know, your feelings on these fights and, you know, the typical advantages.
We'll start to run down the card here a little bit. We'll begin with the main event, as we've been doing here over the last few cards. That, but as you mentioned, with Michael Bisping defending his middleweight championship against Dan Henderson. Bisping about a minus 215 favorite right now. The number seems a little bit short to me at the outset, no?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it is short. And I think it has a lot to do with Henderson finishing Michael Bisping with a devastating knockout when they fought the first time. But that fight happened all the way back in 2009. I mean, that's six, seven years ago, at this point. I mean, this might as well be a lifetime ago. Dan Henderson's now 46 years old. Michael Bisping's now 37. So neither's a spring chicken. But this is Dan Henderson's last fight, he claims. Win or lose, he wins the title. He's retiring in the ring as a champion. Loses, he's going to retire. And that's it. So kind of an interesting storyline heading into this bout. I mean, for me, I think this fight is pretty easy to break down. Either Henderson, you know, finishes him with a stunning knockout early, or Michael Bisping wins the fight. It's as simple as that. I think that Bisping is a fighter, though, who really learns a lot when he faces opponents for a second time. He game plans really well. He's a very smart tactician that way, and he knows he has to avoid that big right hand from Dan Henderson to win this fight. So that's really all he has to worry about here is the big bomb. So when you only have to worry about one thing and you have the advantages everywhere else, that's really all you need. So I like Michael Bisping to win. I'm not sure if it's going to be by finish, but I expect him to win at least four rounds of this fight and retain the championship. I think he's worth parlaying. You know, this is kind of a card where, I guess kind of a spoiler alert of sorts, but card is chalky, and there are some really good favorites on this card who really should steamroll their opponent. So this is kind of a parlay heavy card for me.
I was going to say, when you've got a minus 215, is that one that you're comfortable playing straight, or do you immediately look to go the parlay route with it?
There are a couple pieces that I would. This one, I think, is more of a parlay option for me. That's how I'm looking at it. I just think the way this card is structured, it really lends itself to multiple parlays. It's not a situation where, you know, I only like one heavy favorite on the card, so I'd look to play it straight. So I guess kind of to answer your question, I think the card is dictating the way to play it.
So is Gegard Mousasi at minus 315 one of the parlay pieces you're considering? Or is Vitor Belfort a live dog here?
I think this fight is very similar actually to the main event in the way that it could play out. Vitor Belfort is very similar to Dan Henderson, that he's a blitzer essentially. When he sees one opportunity, he goes for blood, but once he misses that opportunity, you know, slows down and just isn't capable of winning a long, sustained fight. And Vitor is even worse in that situation. Sure, his blitzes are legendary, and that's what he's been known for throughout his career. But post TRT, the testosterone replacement, he just hasn't been the same fighter. And you know, he's good for one or two minutes in fights, and he really folds. The thing about Mousasi is he was knocked out a couple of years ago against Uriah Hall, a pretty stunning spinning kick knockout. He learned a lot from that fight, and I think he has a more cautious approach, more calculated. So he knows what Vitor is capable of, and I think he's going to protect himself from that early blitz. And then after that, it's going to be domination. It could be either you know, distance striking, or he's going to take Vitor to the ground and just beat him up on the ground. I really like Musasi in this bout. I think this is a great opportunity for him to get a big win over a name fighter and really put his name into that top five in the weight class as a future title contender. So, yeah, I like Gegard here. I think he wins by finish. I think that's definitely the most likely result in this bout. Again, another parlay piece on the start.
Well, we have what should be a little bit more competitive of a fight here in the light heavyweight division on the main card. You've got St. Pearl minus 148 favorite here in this one. What do you think of this line?
Yeah, that line's gone down a little bit, it seems, since I last saw it. Last time I saw it, it was minus 160. Yeah, this is an interesting bout. I think OSP, I think there's been some fanfare for him because he was, fairly competitive against John Jones. He wasn't finished in that bout, and he definitely did better than I think most people thought. But at the same time, he still hasn't beaten anybody of significance in the UFC. And he doesn't really have the ground game to really get Jimmy Manuel to the ground and dominate him there, because I think he has an advantage in the submission. But in a standing battle, this is really competitive because Manuel hits like a Mack truck with leg kicks, and he's got heavy hands, and he's not an easy guy to finish at all. So I think this could be a very competitive fight. Maybe some, pushing against the cage, try to control position a bit. But I could definitely see it going to the scorecards. I haven't played this yet, but it's definitely one that I'm really eyeing. Is St. Preux not inside the distance, so a prop. The last I saw it, it was minus 117, so nearly a pick 'em for him not to get a finish in this bout. I think Manoa could certainly win, but I could also see OSP winning a decision. So I think there's an opportunity here, at nearly a pick 'em price to, get a nice opportunity here on a guy who's a bit overrated in OSP.
Well, we've got one heavyweight fight on the card here, and I have to ask, have you ever seen a size difference as big as the one in this fight?
I think it's kind of hard to.
Stefan Struve, 6'11", against his opponent, who is 6 feet tall. I'm not going to try to butcher his name. But Struve's a minus 180 favorite here.
Yeah, Struve is a modest favorite over Daniel Omelianchuk in this bout. Yeah, it's definitely a huge size advantage. What Omelianchuk's done so far in his UFC career, he's reeled off a couple wins, recently, but it's been more by just surviving for three rounds, and his conditioning isn't as bad as some other heavyweights. So if you can just kind of survive some of these guys 5 minute gas tank, you can win fights in the UFC, especially at the lower level. Struve doesn't have the worst conditioning, and he certainly had his issues over the years. But this is a fight he really should win. This is probably the worst opponent Struve has faced, in the UFC in terms of talent and ability. So Struve really should just keep the distance here in this bout and jab his way to a win. That's how I think he wins his bout, but just – Struve's really had a disappointing career in the organization, so he's a really tough guy to, trust your money with. So for me, this is one to sit back and watch, even though I do see Struve having the advantage.
I think it's a hard fight to handicap because you have that 11-inch difference, and it's like Struve almost has to punch at a downward angle or something to try and hit this guy.
That is kind of weird. Yeah, I agree, but it could just be kind of a distance thing. You're going to be so, 3-4 feet away or maybe more, 5-6 feet, and you could just kind of jab him. I guess we'll see. Struve's been kind of struck with, just some inactivity as well. So I could see this being kind of an ugly fight. It wouldn't surprise me at all if it's, kind of a grind fest with, Omelianchuk trying to push Struve against the cage and, crazy kind of, in the middle of the cage kind of striking. I could definitely see it being a grinding sort of fight, which, could be, ugly for viewership and, a little bit weird on the card too.
Well, I know that you're not exactly in front of a computer or anything like that, or then again, maybe you are, I don't know. But off the top of your head, if you want to move around the card here a little bit, what was a fight that stood out to you when you were doing some handicapping of UFC 204?
Yeah, there's a couple of fights for sure. The first fight on the night is the debut of an English fighter named Mark Diakiese. He's facing a Polish guy named Lucas Sajewski, who's he's only lost two fights in his career, but both in the UFC. Diakiese is an excellent prospect. He's I put out fighter grades for all the new fighters in the UFC. I think Diakiese is the third or fourth highest grade I debuted this year. So one of the top debutants in the organization, in this calendar year. He's got really good movement. He's an excellent athlete. I'd even probably an A-level athlete. Just really impressive from that perspective. He's knocked out his last two opponents in a combined 1 minute. Both those guys were undefeated, I believe, heading into those bouts in Bama, which is a pretty decent organization in England, a regional promotion. And he combines that as well with solid grappling. He's got good form. He's got a nice double leg takedown, and he can work in ground and pound from top control. So he's kind of he's kind of like the full package. Basically talk about five-star prospects. I mean, this kid's at least a four and a half. I think there's real talent to be a top 15 lightweight at some point in the future. And his opponent, this Lucas Sajewski, he's all around. I don't see like too many like real glaring holes, but he doesn't hit hard, so he's not really a threat to knock out the Diakiese. And he doesn't really have any standout trait where he's going to be able to take advantage of this fight. He's not a strong grappler. He's got a decent submission game, but nothing that's really going to, really threaten him this bout. So I think Mark Diakiese could, potentially either get a finish or a wide decision in this bout. I just think it's a real disparity in skill. So at minus 210, I think that's a really solid price. I know he's a debutant guy, but there's a good amount of hype around him, and it's really worthy. So he's probably my favorite side on this card of the favorites. I think he's a dominant winner, and he can be parlayed with either Bisping or Musasi or maybe even Adriano Martin. Although there's a little more risk in that one, but I think he's also, a pretty strong winner on this card. So I really like those four favorites to get wins on this UFC 204 card.
And I have to imagine that it helps a guy like Diakiese to be fighting in England in his debut, because if he had to go down to Brazil or maybe go to the U.S., something like that, when he's really been fighting in those local promotions, that may have been a little bit more difficult for him. Now, granted, you could have gotten a better price at that point. Maybe he's minus 180, minus 185, but it probably helps him to be fighting locally, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's actually fought in Manchester before. I'm not sure if it was his last fight or the fight before that. He's not from Manchester per se, but he has fought there before. So he's going to be very comfortable. And I really think this is a matchup where the UFC's put him in a situation to look really good and to get away. And I'm really I honestly believe that they really like this kid. There's a good amount of hype. He's exciting to watch. So I think this is just a really nice opportunity to get him here, because I think moving forward, once people kind of see him in this organization, these prices are going to kind of skyrocket. They'll probably build him along slowly because he's only 23 years old. But the price, you're going to get those as opposed to getting a 2-1 here. So I like that. One underdog I do kind of like is Brad Pickett against Yuri Alcantara. So this is, two veterans kind of going at it in this bout. Pickett, pretty savvy guy, decent gas tank against Yuri Alcantara, who's definitely, physically bigger fighter. But he's coming over from Brazil to fight in England for this bout. And he's, his age has started to show in his last few bouts, and his conditioning is not good at all, that he really slows down in the third round. I think Pickett is smart enough, to take this to deep waters and really put a hurting on Alcantara late in this bout. And maybe with a little home cooking with the decisions, he can definitely get a win here. So in the plus 150 range, I think Brad Pickett is worth a look for an underdog on this UFC 204 card.
You know, I think that that's one of those spots where maybe some recency bias kind of comes into play, because Alcantara fought really closely with Jimmy Rivera in what was a fight of the night back in January. Meanwhile, Pickett's lost three of his last four and had a split decision on the last Bisping card in London against Francisco Rivera. So maybe Alcantara is getting a little bit too much respect for the fight that he had against Rivera.
Yeah, that could be it as well. He also got absolutely dominated by, Frankie Saenz in the previous year before that. And, you know, it's a bit of a different situation. He's going to be fighting an English fighter who's going to have the crowd behind him. Pickett is a bit of a fan favorite over there. I try not to get too involved in, you know, these, I guess, non-fighting angles, as, you know, talking about, you know, crowd and bias and stuff. But, you know, that comes a lot into play, in MMA and boxing as well, and the fight game. That is definitely a factor when there are judges involved. So, in terms of the skill level, I mean, I think there is a bit of advantage for Alcantara, but again, conditioning, crowd, some bias, recency bias, as you said, I do think this could be a spot where Brad Pickett could win.
So, Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com, what's going on over there in preparation for this UFC 204 card?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out my weekly podcast on the MMA analysis that was recorded earlier in the week. We have a consensus bet from that card. It's Mark Diaz-Castro with the Belfort Musasi fight doesn't go the distance. That's one of our parlay pieces. That was a consensus play. I also have scouting reports on the new fighters that are on this card, including Mark Diaz-Castro. So if you're looking for more detailed information, you can also see there. There's YouTube clips of some of his previous fights. So if you want to take a close look yourself and see what kind of talent he has, you can definitely see that there. And I have a breakdown of the main event and the co-main event fight over at MMA Odds Breaker as well. So a lot of content for me, as well as my partners over at that website. So a lot of betting angles and breakdowns heading into this pay-per-view card.
Well, I'm sure you'll find a good sports book to tune in on Saturday night, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you this, but man, have a great time out there in Vegas. Pound a couple of drinks for me, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely, Adam. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Great stuff there from Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com to break down UFC 204. I always make sure that I allow our guests to promote their own personal stuff. And, that's kind of, for one thing, it's a thank you for helping us out here on the show. And, of course, I wouldn't have anybody on this show that I didn't believe in. But they do some phenomenal work over there at OddsBreaker. They do some really, really terrific stuff. They don't just cover UFC. They also cover Bellator. Cage Warriors, they cover all of it over there. So if you want to get, some really sound analysis on the MMA stuff, that's definitely the place to go. And of course, we'll keep having Jay on here, for these UFC breakdowns. But if you're looking for some of the other cards, some of the other promotions, they do some really great work over there. And Jay's done phenomenal work for us. We've had a lot of really good picks on the show here over the last 3 weeks or so. I know we had some really good ones with Virginia last weekend. Washington State was another one. Had some really, really strong plays from our handicappers and from our analysts here on the show. So hopefully all of our listeners have been able to take advantage of all of those good opportunities. If you head on over to bangthebook.com, you can get all four of my series previews for the Major League Baseball playoffs here for the division series. I also have a picks and analysis piece up over at bangthebook.com on today's two ALDS games, Texas-Toronto, the early one, Cleveland-Boston, the late one. You can go check out my insight on that. I added a couple of NBA season win totals, Minnesota and New Orleans, yesterday over to the website. So we're gradually getting through those as time permits here. The NBA season coming up, about 3 or 4 weeks' time. So definitely check those out. Got a lot of NHL preseason analysis up over at bangthebook.com as well. We have all kinds of content. We've got game previews for NFL, college. We got the sportsbook reviews. We've got power trends, power lines, all kinds of stuff. So head on over to bangthebook.com. Make us your one-stop shop for all of your sports betting needs. Coming up on the Friday show, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment, myself and Cole Ryan for week 5, our Bang the Book podcast entry, 10-10 here. We started 7-3 over 2 weeks. We're 3-7 over the last 2 weeks. We're looking forward to getting back on track here with the week 5 card And then also we'll have Brent from DSI Sportsbook with the odds report. He'll tell us where the sharp action is in both the college football and the NFL markets. So that's what you have to look forward to on the Friday show as we wrap up another great week on Bang the Book Radio. So I'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Really appreciate it. Reach out on Twitter. I'm at Skating Tripods, at Bang the Book. We answer everything. So please reach out and chat with us, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.